call the Environment Policy and Oversight Committee to order. We do have to approve the minutes from February 23rd. Anybody want to make that motion? Representative Jaskowski?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to approve the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Jaskowski moves the minutes of February 23rd, 2010. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. We do have bills in front of us today. Representative Gardner is here with Senate File 1324. Sorry, we're going to be doing it a little bit out of order here. We're going to start with House File 2655. And Representative Gardner to the bill, if you want to make that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 2655. Actually, before I do that, I see it be going to the General Register. I didn't know if anybody talked to GovOps.
I have not.
Okay.
There's any. So.
What's that?
They have not talked to us either. Okay. So we'll just make the motion to send it to the General Register.
Bob, he'll request it. I'd like to move House File 2655 that it be recommended to pass and be placed in the General Register.
Okay. Representative Gardner moves that House File 2655 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a delete all, which finds a happy medium with the Department of Administration and the Construction and Demolition Debris Recyclers. That's the, I'd like to move the 2655 DE1 amendment.
Okay, Representative Gardner moves the DE1 amendment. And this is get it in the shape and form that the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Gardner to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill is actually about saving money as well as conserving landfill space. It is a language that is contained in the bonding bill, but we never really know what the fate of the bonding bill is going to be, and it's moving separately in the Senate, so I have it separately in the House. Representative Zellers had said on many occasions that if another state has a good idea for how to do something, that we should think about it, and that's what we're doing here today. Wisconsin has a requirement that all public or all state building projects have to have a minimum recycling rate for construction and demolition waste of 50%, and that has actually led to a thriving construction and demolition debris industry in Wisconsin, but it also saves money on the construction of a project. So you have a handout here in your packet that says Wisconsin's cost savings from similar requirements. They have a couple of ranges here, but the averages for these projects that were involved under those requirements saved an average of $179.30 for every 1,000 square feet of construction. It takes a little bit of if it's a governor wanting to veto the bill, you might want to let me know, Mr. Chair. Okay. Usually he sends a letter telling his first he's going to do it. We have infrastructure in the Twin Cities as well as other parts of the state. We do have a in the delete all amendment that there's a 40-mile requirement, so if you're more than 40 miles away from a construction or demolition debris recycling facility, you wouldn't be covered. And it also deals with the capital investment projects that are $5 million and more for construction. I'll leave it there, Mr. Chair, and be happy to answer any questions. I've got some people who can answer technical questions if you need to, but I thought we could just move along.
Okay. Sure. Any questions for the author? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gardner, I'm just curious, where would we build $5 million project that's more than 40 miles away from a C&D dump? I mean, where is there spots that are more than 40 miles away from?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I'm sure somebody will think of a volleyball amateur sports facility that could be out in the middle of nowhere. I don't really know, but that's kind of what we had in mind. This is going to cover most of the densely populated areas where the infrastructure is. $5 million is the threshold that Wisconsin used, and they felt that projects that were smaller than that shouldn't really be within that mandate because they may not have the economy of scale to have enough material. In terms of the savings, we don't tax recycling; we tax waste that goes for disposal. And that's been in place for about 20 years. So that's where most of the savings come from, and from sale of some of the commodities that come out of there. And then that triggers the private sector. When they see that it works, they'll go, aha, this is saving money, so we should adopt it too. So the public sector would be leaders, and the private sector would follow if they find that it's economically feasible.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, Representative Gardner, would you like to renew your motion?
I'd like to renew my motion that House File 2655, as amended, be passed and be placed in the General Register.
Okay. And Representative Gardner renews his motion that House File 2655, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Chair is in doubt. We will have a division. All those in favor, raise your hands. All opposed? There being 8 ayes and 4 nays, the motion does prevail and the bill is passed. And Representative Gardner to the second bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is actually a Senate file for reasons as I'll explain, but I'd like to move Senate File 1323 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Health Policy and Human Services Committee. I just spoke to Representative Thiessen this afternoon.
Okay. Representative Gardner moves that Senate File 1323 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register for Health Policy.
The Health Policy, yeah.
And Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an author's amendment here where I've worked with some of the stakeholders to improve this. I'd like to move the A8 amendment, the Senate File 1323 A8 amendment.
Okay. Representative Gardner moves the A8 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Gardner to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you saw the earlier version of this bill last year and we passed it on a voice vote to the General Register. It passed out of the Senate with only a few dissenting voices, and when it showed up in the General Register in the House, a lot of phone calls started getting made to Minnesota where people who specialize in the issue of disposal of sharps had some issues with the bill, and so during the interim, I agreed to hold off on the bill and to do some research, talk with some of the stakeholders, and figure out a better way to do this. What you have before you is pretty much what has been adopted in California as a kind of a compromise to essentially ask manufacturers of sharps to let people in Minnesota know how they are dealing with the problem of sharps disposal. One of the greatest public health threats to workers in the hospitality and waste industries is being stuck by a needle from people improperly disposing of a sharps. So it either can be a syringe or a lancet or other medical devices with a needle. There's a very good letter here from the Safe Needle Disposal Coalition in your packet that describe some of the hazards here. You also have a letter from Waste Management talking about the volume of sharps that they have just in their recycling facilities where people can be exposed to needles. And the National Solid Waste Management Association, which is an association of haulers, also has some information there for you as well. For some of you who kept your TV on after the Super Bowl, you may have seen that show Undercover Boss. And the chief operating officer for Waste Management actually went undercover to be a waste management worker at various facilities that his company owns, and got to see face-to-face just what kind of hazards people working on a recycling line and driving trucks have to face, where you might have infectious disease that you might get. Needle sticks can cause in the hospitality and waste management workers the risk of an infection with hepatitis B or C or HIV that requires special equipment and sometimes people having shots before they go to work. We protect our healthcare workers in healthcare facilities. We protect us. You'll probably see that we have these sharps containers in the bathrooms here in the Capitol in the state office building, but we don't do a very good job of protecting people in the hospitality industry and people working waste management. I have here Mr. Erickson from Ultimed, who can tell you a little bit about the bill, and then we can go from there.
Okay. And please, if you could state your name for the record, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Erickson. I'm CEO of Ultimed Incorporated, which is based in St. Paul. Ultimed manufactures insulin syringes and pen needles, which are sold by pharmacies throughout the United States and Canada. We favor the proposed legislation. There are over 2.4 billion syringes and pen needles sold by pharmacies in the United States annually. It is estimated over 30 million syringes and pen needles are sold by pharmacies every year just in the state of Minnesota. We, along with others in our industry, have long been concerned about proper needle disposal. Improperly discarded needles have caused many injuries and infections to people, particularly sanitary waste workers. Landfill operators have been especially affected. Due to the risks of infections, accidental needle stick incidents in the U.S. cause inconvenience, mental trauma, tens of millions of dollars of sick leave and testing expense annually. Because of this growing nationwide accidental needle stick problem, the EPA published in December 2004 guidelines for state and local governments to follow. The EPA sharps disposal guidelines have become the new default standard for states to eventually follow. About 10 states have passed various forms of legislation and rules in an attempt to move the ball forward towards conformance with the new EPA guidelines. To this date, Minnesota has not changed its sharps disposal rules from those used prior to 2004. Because we manufacture these sharps devices, we have kept in close contact with the changing state and local regulations. We, along with others in the other sharps manufacturers, have also been working closely with the Product Stewardship Institute on this issue. The Product Stewardship Institute is a nonprofit-based organization based out of Boston, which gets substantial funding from the EPA. 45 states, including Minnesota, are members of this organization. The safe disposal of hazardous products is a financial drain on state and local governments. The concept of product stewardship helps relieve the government of this expense by requiring those who make money manufacturing or distributing hazardous products to share in the cost of disposal. At the various industry meetings sponsored by the Product Stewardship Council, we have proposed that syringe and pen needle manufacturers such as us should supply a sharps container with each box of our purchase of our products. This is an easy and low-cost way for us to participate in a solution using the shared responsibility tenet of product stewardship. It has been proven in successful disposal programs in other parts of the U.S. and Canada that the supply of a free sharps container is the single most important element to any program's success. By just supplying free sharps containers, the incidence of accidental needle sticks is dramatically reduced. The ultimate goal of the EPA guidelines is to remove sharps waste out of the household waste stream and into the medical waste stream. How this is to be accomplished and funded is an issue other states are trying to solve. This bill does not provide a solution as to where people will dispose of their sharps containers. Thus, it could end up in the trash. Nevertheless, this bill is a big step in the right direction. It follows the shared responsibility concept of product stewardship. Because this legislation is an incomplete solution, follow-on legislation will likely in future years bring Minnesota in total compliance with the new EPA guidelines. What we are proposing is similar to the situation of California's Senate Bill 1305, which became effective last September. Senate Bill 1305 in California is also incomplete, but it did accomplish the goal of getting things started down the right path. As time goes on, possibly even in the current session in California, it is likely California will address the remaining disposal issues and legislate add-ons to 1305, which will accomplish the complete disposal solution. Referring back to Minnesota, if the legislation passes, all home-use sharps and pen needle users will have a free sharps container, which will encourage their use. That would be a huge step forward. It would be much better than the present situation where sharps are deposited in a host of unsatisfactory containers or no containers at all. Just having three sharps containers will greatly decrease the incidence of accidental needle sticks. And I'd also like to address the amendment that that's a positive step forward because it puts the onus on us to educate and help facilitate the process for the end game, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Any questions for Mr. Erickson or Representative Gardner? Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this is for Representative Gardner, but I recognize that we took all inferences to agriculture out of this bill, and I'm not suggesting that we put them back in. I simply was wondering if, in your opinion and in your testifier's opinion, is there certainly latitude if veterinarians or if somebody wanted to use these sharps containers for veterinary, you know, like you bring Fido home from the vet and he needs a shot for a while, is it certainly going to be applicable if somebody wants to use them on their own volition, not being told that they need to, but is there provision for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Saylor, the first part of the bill, the original part of the bill, has to do with buying syringes at a retailer. It doesn't say what you're using the syringes for. You know, my sister had a diabetic cat that she injected for 7 or 8 years, and you know, I don't really care where they come from, but if it's a home user, we want to keep it out of the trash. If you're talking about a larger agricultural operation, I'd have to say that you know, they'd probably have to undertake something different, but that isn't really part of the intent of the bill.
Any other questions? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gardner, what are the consequences or penalties if people, companies don't follow this, if it becomes law?
Representative Drazkowski, thanks for the question. The language is actually almost identical to what was used in California, where there are no penalties and the only requirement is that they submit a plan for what they're doing to educate about what to do with sharps. And in terms of administrative burden, you know, it could be as simple as, since they're going to have to submit a report to California anyway, all you have to do is cross out California and write in Minnesota and just send it to us so that we know what's going on. But there's no requirement for funding, there's no penalty, and there's also, I should mention also the last paragraph of the amendment pretty much takes out any sort of shielded sharp. So you might have a pen needle that looks something like this where you push out, or you actually don't even do that. You just inject it and there's nothing exposed, and those wouldn't even be covered.
Okay. And Representative Anderson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I have a question on the A8 amendment. Line 1-2, you delete sharps manufacturer, and then in line 4, you use that term again. Is that by design?
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes. The original part of the bill is about whether you get 90 or more syringes rather than lancets or some other sort of sharps device, which are volumetrically small. And I made sure that in that line, we made sure that we said syringe manufacturers for that part of the requirement. But the rest of the amendment deals with sharps of all kinds, which can include lancets in terms of what you plan to deal with. But in terms of giving out a container, it's just for syringes.
Okay. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Gardner, it sounds like the bill itself, it becomes a law that really doesn't have a lot of meaning. I mean, there's not any compliance mechanism in place for this. It's going to certainly make the volume of our statutes bigger, so it'll cost us more to print those off. MPCA, do they support this? Do they suggest that they've got additional extra staff to do this, or be curious about that? And then how many jobs is this particular mandate going to kill in Minnesota?
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, let me see if I can get all of that. The PCA, is with many pieces of legislation, hasn't issued a position. They have. I did speak with staff today to address some of their concerns. Their question is, you know, how much does it cost to put up stuff on a website? We probably would need to go to environmental finance with this just to double check. In terms of jobs being killed, seated next to me is a manufacturer of Sharps and Sharps containers who has a business in Minnesota, and I suspect that it wouldn't kill any jobs on his end of things.
Any further questions? Okay, seeing none, Representative Gardner, would you like to
Mr. motion? Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that Senate File 1323, as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the Committee on Health Care and Human Services Policy and Oversight.
Okay. Representative Gardner renews his motion that Senate File 1323, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Health Policy Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails and the bill is passed. And thank Representative Gardner, if you want to trade seats with me.
Okay, Mr. Chair, keep it down. Representative Eakin, do you want to move your bill?
Yes, I would like to move that House File 3027 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Very good. Representative Eakin moves House File 3027 be recommended to pass and moved to the General Register. Do you any amendments or anything? I haven't.
No amendments.
Okay,
Mr. Chair.
It's just all my mess of paper here. Very good. So we just go right to the bill. I'm a little rusty, Mr. Chair, but go ahead to your bill.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill makes a change in current law that requires that newly permitted facilities turning waste into energy through incineration must test for mercury emissions on a quarterly basis for 3 years. This was also being applied to expansions in facilities, and if the results show that the emissions are less than 50% of permit levels, testing after those 3 years need only be done on an annual basis. House File 3027 reduces the quarterly testing requirements for expansions to the 1 year to the 1 year if the new permit covers only an expansion and if the mercury emissions are 50% below permit levels during the first year quarterly test. So so you don't have to do it for 3 years, you just do it on an annual basis after the first year shows that you're getting under 50% for any expansion doing the quarterly test, but then every year after that, it only has to be done annually. The bill does cover two new expansions that are currently underway, Olmsted Dodge and the Pope Douglas. There are future expansions that will also be included. I'm aware of one that's going to be occurring in Perham. The PCA has not shown any opposition to this at all, and it's expected that it could save operating counties as much as $40,000 annually. With that, we also have with us today Trudy Richter, who would like to also testify to the bill.
Great. You could say your name and affiliation for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Trudy Richter. I'm with the Minnesota Resource Recovery Association, and I represent the 10 facilities we have statewide that process approximately 1 million tons of waste and turns it into energy that's used to create electricity, so it's renewable energy, and energy that's used to produce steam and used for communities' businesses, such as in Pope Douglas, one of the affected counties group for this amendment, where their steam is pumped to the Douglas County Hospital and to the 3M facility in their town, thus supporting all of those jobs and businesses as well. I apologize for Pope Douglas not being here today, and John will give you a lot more detail about the impact on Olmsted County, but I just wanted to assure the committee that Pope Douglas is adding this expansion, and Stearns, Benton, and Sherburne, Western Sherburne counties, are going to start sending their waste up to Pope Douglas in Alexandria, Minnesota. Those three counties have, for the last 20 years, been involved in a waste energy program in Elk River, and they have an integrated solid waste management program that they have had in place those 20 years. And for the last 10 years, a portion of Western Stearns County waste has also gone to the PERM facility. So these are counties, again, as John will testify, that have for a long time supported waste energy, have had their integrated programs anticipating that, have their household waste and mercury reduction plans in place, and it's just a matter of shifting the waste from one facility to another to have it managed. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would prefer that Mr. Helmers is able to tell you more about the technical sides of the bill.
Okay, so if we have any questions, we can maybe wait till he's done. If you could state your name for the tape, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Helmers. I'm the solid waste manager for Olmsted County, and I represent the 62 employees that work in our solid waste division. I'm a professional engineer licensed in Minnesota, and I've worked in solid waste management for 17 years of my career. Appreciate the opportunity to speak with you regarding the proposed modification to Statute 116.85. Dodge and Olmsted counties over the past 24 years have built and expanded and operated an integrated solid waste management program which properly manages all solid waste generated within the two counties. As most everyone knows, there's no single solution to properly managing all types of the waste produced in our communities, but by using an integrated system, all types of waste can be disposed of in the most beneficial, environmentally safe, and economic manners. Our integrated solid waste management system is illustrated in this brochure that I brought along. We used this last year when we were doing a rate increase to help people understand where the money was going to be going. Includes systems that reduce and reuse of waste, promoting that, recycling of marketable materials, composting the yard waste, resource recovery by the mixed municipal solid waste combustion and energy recovery, and then finally land disposal in a modern, properly engineered landfill. The best way to deal with mercury is to get it out of the waste stream, and we are appreciative of the previous legislatures which mandated removal of mercury from consumer products. To deal with the old products that exist in our homes and businesses and ultimately end up as waste to be disposed of, Olmsted County Integrated Waste Management System includes a hazardous waste facility that collects known mercury-containing items such as thermometers and thermostats, fluorescent light bulbs, etc. We also provide education about mercury and other hazardous waste that should be not put into the regular garbage that commercial waste haulers pick up. And to date, our hazardous waste facility has collected and removed over 1,300 pounds of mercury from the waste stream. We know that everyone does not yet use the proper place for all their waste. The Olmsted County Waste Energy Facility also has pollution control systems to remove as much mercury as possible. We do this by lowering the temperature of the flue gas through the, and pass that through an acid gas scrubber. To the point where mercury is condensable. Then we inject to the flue gas a powdered activated carbon, and mercury can be collected in a baghouse filter. The results of environmental monitoring that we have conducted over the last 23 years have shown that we control 98% of the mercury that's in the waste coming to the facility is removed. Currently, our facility emits less than 4% of the amount that's allowed to be emitted by the permit. In 2009, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, based on Minnesota Rule 7011.1270, Item B, and Federal Regulations 40 CFR 62.15250, allowed the facility to reduce the frequency of mercury emission testing on the two existing municipal waste combustors, Units 1 and 2, to once every 3 years. This occurred after 3 years of testing showed that the facility met the reduced frequency testing requirements of the permit. The average test results since 2004 for mercury at the facility have been about 2 micrograms per dry standard cubic meter. well below the state requirement of 60 micrograms per dry standard cubic meter for long-term mercury emissions. This proposed amendment to the state statute 116.85 is in line with the current federal mercury testing requirements for the new small Class 2 municipal waste combustors. And the county's concern with this current statute is that it requires the quarterly mercury testing would cost our citizens and businesses an additional $40,000 per year without adding any environmental benefit. The specialized testing required multiple samples from multiple locations along the flue gas stream and would require additional remobilization costs every quarter to conduct samples and then the testing in the labs. The existing units the OWF expansion unit number 3 will be fired with the same waste as processed in the existing units, and unit 3 has the same pollution control systems as that exist in the existing units. We maintain that applying the statute on a per unit basis rather than on a per facility basis will not yield any meaningful new information for the state's efforts to reduce mercury emissions or provide further protection for the environment and our citizens. To my knowledge, the MPCA does not oppose this change being sought by this amendment. The change would currently be applied only to the facilities serving Olmsted and Dodge counties and the facilities serving Polk, Douglas, Stearns, Benton, and Sherburne counties. Both of these facilities are in the process of adding a new unit for extended waste capacity. The existing solid waste management practices in these two counties would remain the same, including the education and outreach to remove mercury from the waste stream, the same highly affected waste combustor design and licensed and waste combustor certificate operators. The proposed amendment, proposed statute still requires 1 year of quarterly testing that will prove the equipment that is being added to the new units will meet the standards. I'm confident that that year of quarterly testing will show results similar as what we have logged from the existing two units. Annual testing for the following 2 years will be adequate to show that the new units continuously meets the permit requirements. Respectfully request the committee consider passing on House File 3027. Thank you.
Any questions for the testifiers? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It certainly sounds like you're doing a good job getting mercury out of the waste stream, out of the air. I did have a question. I'd tell you it caught my eye because maybe because I ran a lab doing chemistry for hire for a number of years, and that $40,000 per unit per year. How are you coming up with that? Is that mostly sampling cost, perhaps?
Mr. Helmers.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Yes, primarily what has to happen is the independent testing lab that we bring to site brings a crew and they sample various locations through the flue gas stream in order to get representative samples before and after the air pollution control system, because part of our requirement is to show a percent reduction. It's not just the level of emission, it's also whatever's in there. Even if it's a very tiny amount, we still have to reduce it by a factor. And so that adds to the cost, and then the testing itself goes through a fairly rigorous set of tests that are multiple tests on the same samples.
Representative Purcell.
Are you required to test other than total mercury? Do you have to test mercury species?
Mr. Helmers.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I'm not positive of all of the tests specifics, but my understanding is that there are multiple laboratory tests on multiple samples.
Comment. I think would deserve. I'll follow up with some PCA folks. I think I don't know if they're here, but that sounds like a little overkill. When I saw that number, I thought, boy, that's a lot of money for testing four times a year. So that's all I have.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to congratulate Representative Eakin for bringing this bill forward. It's refreshing at times to see us maybe backing off a little bit or relaxing a little bit, a standard that I think you're very well handling with this new standard. So I thank you for that. And just to plug on waste to energy, to me it's just a win-win situation. We get rid of our garbage in a good way and produce something, green energy, that we can use and sell to businesses. So I want to thank all of you for your work, and I support this bill.
I have a couple of questions. Mr. Helmers, you can't actually break down mercury in the incineration process, right? You have to have a baghouse filter for that. Yes, okay. My understanding of the bill is that you're assuming that you're going to have technology that is either the same or better for treating emissions, so why do you need to overdo it if you already know where your mercury emissions are for your existing boilers, right? Does that make sense?
Mr. Chair, I guess that's our position is that we're already showing with existing equipment what we're capable of, very, very low limits, or said another way, high removal efficiency, and we don't see the need to spend additional money to show the same thing.
Sure. And the new boiler line you're doing, is the technology just the same, or is it just, you know, the latest, greatest that has that ratchets down emissions more and more every time you invest something new?
Mr. Chair, part of the reason of the success of getting the longer testing period after 2004 was an installation of the latest and greatest on existing units 1 and 2. We are currently using exactly that same technology for unit 3. So
right.
All and three units are going to be.
And if I understand my conversations with Ms. Richter over the years, is that Waste Energy now has to use the best available technology, right?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes, that is correct.
And the last thing for Ms. Richter, and then Representative Saylor's question, what's the largest source of dioxin pollution in the air in the United States?
Backyard burning barrels, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And we have a lot here in the state.
Just a little reminder. Okay. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question would be, for either the testifiers. I'm just wondering if, when changes were made, relaxation of the standards based on the mercury standards that have shown in the past through the testing, if there would be a new component of the waste stream, let's say an entire another county started sending waste to that facility, would there, are the controls that are in place currently able to adjust for that, do you think, or would we be seeing a situation where a new waste stream that wasn't previously benchmarked would then be adding a potential mercury source? Do you think, is that a possible problem, or do you think that it's already taken care of?
Mr. Helmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, just to be clear, the standard was not relaxed. The frequency of the testing was relaxed. And as far as additional waste coming to the facilities from other counties and things like that, we are required to do waste sorts so that we know what's in those waste streams. And we're only allowed to accept certain types of waste. And so I don't anticipate that another typical municipal waste stream coming into an existing facility would change anything.
And Mr. Helmers, where is the waste that would go to Pope Douglas, for example? Where is that going now? That's going to an RDF waste energy setup anyway, right?
Mr. Chairman, yes. My remarks were to assure you that any waste that is now going to be contracted up to Pope Douglas has already, for the last 20 years, gone to a resource recovery facility in Elk River. And even the western part of Stearns County, which was too far to go to Elk River and went to Perham, and now will be shifted to go up to Alexandria, it has also been processed. And those programs in those counties are like all the counties that have waste energy facilities. We have higher recycling rates than all other counties in the state. And we have very strong education programs and work very hard with our household hazardous waste facilities as well to remove materials that we would prefer not to go into the waste energy facility.
Any other questions? I think most of us have got committees tonight, too, so we're just as happy to keep moving. Did you have any final comments, Mr. Helmer?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to elaborate slightly on the way the equipment is actually structured is the annual testing that we do sets a limit on the addition of the powdered activated carbon, the amount of carbon that we have to add to the flue gas. And we do that in a conservative manner. We actually inject more powdered activated carbon than what's necessary to meet the limit. And it's then available as extra material, condensing nuclei, for any kind of spikes that might come through, any kind of additional problems that would be coming out of the waste that's being injured into it.
Representative Jenke.
Thank you. I know you're about ready to get out of here, but I want to say, too, it's a good bill, Representative Eakin. I'm glad you brought it. Again, we should see a dozen of these a day. It's unneeded regulation that's going to save money for both this business and the consumers that are part of it. The environment's still protected. There's no reason to have it. PCA's fine with it. So thank you for bringing it. And again, I look forward to like a dozen a day of these over the next 2 weeks.
Representative.
Yeah, maybe one bill with a dozen ideas instead of a dozen bills.
Yeah. Very good. Well, that does seem very reasonable. If there aren't any other questions, Representative Eakin, do you want to renew your motion?
Yes, I renew my motion that House File 3027 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Very good. Representative Eakin renews his motion that the bill be passed and move on to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion passes and the bill moves on. And we are adjourned.